Big show for you here today. Flip the Script, our summer series, is back. We take a look at who's going to be this year's Cincinnati Bengals, the Carnival offense. And with that, we couldn't have anyone else on the show other than the inventor of the Carnival offense himself. Scott Pianowski joins me to break down who's going to be this year's Bengals. We go through a ton of teams in the NFC South that could qualify for this honor. We talk about a few teams that are right on the edge, but maybe don't make the mark. A lot of teams, a lot of players, a lot of good discussion coming your way. Let's get into it. It's Wednesday, June 4th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that is Scott Pianowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, Matt. We made it to June. We're excited about the fantasy season, and today we're going to talk about fun, right? Today's basically its topic is fun. So, yeah, it's a great day to talk ball.
Absolutely. I can't believe it's June. Where did May go? Time is whistling past at an alarming pace. But since it is the month of June, I can happily say that Flip the Script, our summer series, is back. For those new to the podcast feed, maybe new to the series in general, essentially this is sort of tongue-in-cheek, right? Because I think some of this analysis is silly, to put it kindly. You know, who's going to be this year's whatever? But basically, we're looking back at the biggest fantasy surprises, maybe some disappointments, storylines of the 2024 season, and trying to identify who we think is going to be this year's version of that. We're going to have, I think, like five of these shows over this next month here. But Scott's right. The initial kickoff of this one here is absolutely a fun topic, because we're going to kick off the series by looking at who could be this year's Cincinnati Bengals, aka a true carnival offense. So Scott, as the inventor, the creator, the trademark of the carnival offense, why don't you explain that term to the people out there?
It's really simple. You want a very bankable offense that is tied to a defense in the same locker room that can't stop anybody. You want a team that looks like they're headed for a high-scoring pinball shootout every week. Think of what the Bengals and Ravens did last year, where every time they played, it was like first team to 40 wins. Who can play those types of games on a weekly basis? So again, it's really simple. Bankable offense, lousy defense.
Perfectly simple. And as we always do with Flip the Script, before we get into the nominations for this year's award and then the eventual voting, we want to take a look back at the 2024 version of this team. So let's take a quick look back at the 2024 Bengals, which ultimately ended up being a perfect fantasy storm. Joe Burrow was the quarterback 5 overall. Jamar Chase, of course, took titles home for people as the wide receiver 1 overall, a true advantage at the position. T. Higgins was wide receiver 13 in total scoring, but was a top 5 performer in per game fantasy scoring. And Chase Brown ended up being a revelation, one of the true few like zero running back hits of last season. He finished as the running back 12. So I guess, again, when we look back at how this happened, Scott, a lot of it is, one, the defense, which was completely lousy on the other side. That was a talking point all year long. It was a mix of, hey, Lou Anarumo, really good defensive coordinator, but maybe he works better with veterans. And because the fact that they have invested into this offense and they consistently invest in the offensive line, not just the skill position players, whether some of those investments work out is another question. They'd had to try to stock the cupboard with these young players who didn't really work out. I mean, you know, the amount of young Bengals that really just have not hit the ground running over the last couple of years, like highly drafted players, the list is long. It's basically Trey Hendrickson and a bunch of kids who aren't getting the job done right now. So that was part of it, but also it was like the very highly concentrated nature of this offense. Like, yeah, Mike Gesicki had a couple moments when he'd kind of become the slot receiver when T. Higgins would move out of the lineup, but, you know, Jermaine Burton obviously had, to put it kindly, a rocky year. Andre Yoshivas wasn't really a quote target earner, even if he was a nice useful player as a slot receiver at times. When Zach Moss went down, Chase Brown was the only game in town. So that was a big part of the 2024 Bengals. And I think it's going to be something when we look for these next year's, this year's candidates of this, is like a concentrated offense to go along with the defense that's giving it up on the other side.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, that's actually something I do. I will write a carnival article in the summer. I'll also write about the teams that have the narrow usage, the tight concentration that you mentioned. I don't think I've considered it a prerequisite to be included in the Carnival conversation, but man, it's so good for fantasy. Chase Brown was a screaming right answer, somebody I was underweight on last year, and it was no fun. He never came off the field. He was good in all packages, and you're playing hurry up. You're trying to push the pace, make a comeback, playing in a high-scoring game. I mean, a running back who never comes off the field in that situation is fantasy gold. I think he was one of the most important players, one of the most important guys to get right, and I got it wrong last year. It was very frustrating. But the Bengals were the only team last year to score over 400 points. They were 470s, I want to say, and the only team that also allowed over 400 points. So if you want to be really simple about it, there are some teams, we'll talk about them today, who met the defensive component of that, some teams who met the offensive component of that. But Cincinnati was easily the dunk of the Carnival offenses last year. And, you know, it's everybody's been paid here, right? Higgins been paid. Chase has been paid. Burrow's been paid. They did not add competition for Chase Brown. So it's a decent chance we may end up finishing where we started, because the Bengals for 2025 have all, and people may say, why is it even a Carnival anyway? It's like, well, you've ever been to a Carnival? You go there and there's just a million things to do. It's sensory overload because everything is there. There's bad food to eat, the scary rides that may or may not have been vetted, may not be safe. There's all this excitement. It's a little bit scary, but you can get anything you want at the Carnival. And that's the idea for fantasy, is that, okay, you know, where are we going to get 500 yards today? Where are we going to get 40 points today? And that's why we call this thing a Carnival to begin with.
Yeah. And just looking at the Bengals for this year, because I do want to have that conversation as well. You're right that not a lot has changed here. I mean, offensively, they're running the same crew back, essentially. They're talking up Jermaine Burton in mini camps, like, he's really turned a corner, you know, whatever. We'll see if he can just make the damn roster. I don't expect him to have any sort of fantasy relevance as long as Chase and Higgins are healthy. But the Higgins health is worth mentioning, at least. That's probably like your only hesitation. Maybe their only hesitation in really giving him like a true, true long-term extension, because they definitely gave him an extension. But if you look under the hood of that deal, it's something that they can get out of. It's kind of like a year-to-year thing. It's almost shocking that Higgins would agree to that deal, although it's clear these guys just all wanted to stay together. But he was the wide receiver 4 in per-game scoring last year, and I think there's really, again, no reason to think he can't do that when he's healthy. The Brown conversation is interesting just because, hey, Zach Moss is back after the injury, but you know, the only real addition that they made there was Taj Brooks in the third day of the draft. Samaje Perine, you know, is like just a veteran pass down guy. I don't think either of them are really going to slice into his workload a ton. And I guess the bigger question we have to answer about this year's Bengals, Scott, is just, do we expect any improvement on the defensive side of the ball? Because they move on from Lou Anarumo, they get Al Golden, who was a college defensive coordinator, and what they're selling is, hey, Al Golden's going to be able to communicate to these young guys because he comes from the college level. He'll be able to foster and grow some of these guys that maybe weren't working out. Well, their first round edge rusher as of right now is not even practicing with the team because, of course, they haven't signed him to a contract. Their best defensive player by a long shot, Trey Hendrickson, is threatening to sit out games. We'll see if he actually goes through that, but he's threatening to sit out games unless he gets a real deal contract extension. So I don't know, like maybe their plan that Al Golden's just going to sprinkle some magic young player pixie dust on this works out, but otherwise this still looks like one of the bottom 10 defenses in the NFL at best, honestly.
Yeah, at best, I wouldn't be surprised if they're a bottom 5 unit. I'd be shocked if they can fix this. It's going to be more than a coordinator. As you mentioned, they're off to a poor start with their best player unhappy and their first pick unsigned. It was kind of par for the course the way the Bengals have run things in the past. So I'm so confident. In fact, it's funny because as confident as I am in this offense, I'm equally as confident that the defense is not going to be repaired. I cannot wait to watch Bengals games because they're going to be the last game to end in the window. They're going to be the game that's like, oh, wow, this game still hasn't gone to the half yet. You know, that's going to be the Bengals in 2025. And I'm generally, Matt, not somebody – I've been such a passive quarterback drafter for years. But Burrow, because Burrow won't be the first quarterback off the board in any league, but he can easily be the quarterback one, I might break my rules. I might actually have a different shade to my draft strategy because getting Burrow – and hopefully attached to one of his three musketeers, you know, because Brown catches enough passes that's a link. And obviously you'd want either receiver. You probably need the first or second pick in your draft to get Chase. But Burrow is somebody who's forcing me to reevaluate my quarterback strategy, something that I haven't, I've been doing the same thing for such a long time, but I think he's worth a conversation there.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't found myself drafting into or like ranking Joe Burrow in the same tier of guys like Allen, Jackson, and Jaden Daniels. I think there's a clear separation with those guys just because they bring the rushing advantage. Yeah. Okay. Well, sure. just because they bring the rushing advantage, I think we're all on an agreement of that. But to me, I do think, and this is more of a structural kind of tangent and something I'm still sort of working out in my head, but I just look at like just even past quarterback 10 in early best ball ADP, you know, there's Brock Purdy, there's Justin Fields, there's, pocket passers, you know, that are very interesting, like the Justin Herberts, the Dak Prescotts, that I think there are scenarios. I don't know how likely or how many multiverses that really exist where this is going to happen, but I think there are scenarios where guys like Herbert and Dak Prescott, you know, maybe even Jordan Love, if some of those young receivers take a leap or Matthew Golden hits the ground running, where they can put up passing production kind of in the same ballpark, maybe like a 90% arbitrage version of what Joe Burrow can give you. And then even beyond that, there's Drake May in the late, late rounds. Like there's some interesting second year quarterbacks. So to me, Scott, I've for no reason it's not Joe Burrow's fault, or even Jalen Hurts, I think, or Patrick Mahomes, I'd put in this group too. Even Baker Mayfield at QB7. We're going to talk about the Bucks in this segment later on. I just haven't found myself gravitating to that group of quarterbacks because I think range of outcomes wise, there's so many interesting guys, like I said, past quarterback 10 in early drafts.
Right. For years, I've been using the analogy that the quarterback position in fantasy football is like the public transit system in New York. You know, you miss a train, you catch another one in 5 minutes, right? And there's just no reason to be stressed about it because there's more supply than the demand, you know, requires. So why should you even get involved in somebody early? But that said, Burrow, the fact that he can be a tier two quarterback drafted, and I could easily see him being in the first tier when the season ends, and he's not going to run that much. He'll sprinkle in a little bit of running. It's not going to be a big part of his game, but And yet you mentioned some of these quarterbacks. I mean, Justin Fields has been the player maybe I've been most excited to draft this year because I think he's going to run for 1,000 yards. And we know that's, you know, Rich Rebar told us what a cheat code that is. And also I want to mention, this is no place in this show really, but just such a cool stat I want to mention. You mentioned Jordan Love. Did you know nobody on the Packers has had more than 100 targets since Devontae Adams left town? And last year, nobody on the team got to 80. I think maybe there's just no right answer in the Green Bay receiver room because they love platooning so much more than maybe any other team. As much as I love the coach there, LaFleur, and Love's a good player. He was hurt last year. You give him a pass for that. But I wonder if maybe the receivers are a dead end there. But quarterback you tell people when they start fantasy, the NFL is all about the quarterback. Fantasy football is not all about the quarterback because you don't have to proactively draft it. You know, people think, oh, Josh Allen, he should be my first pick, right? Or Mahomes should be my first pick, or Lamar Jackson should be my first pick, or whatever. It's like, no, that's absolutely not. That's not how the game is backwards that way. But I'm wondering if I've gotten so relaxed drafting quarterbacks on a budget that I wonder if I'm missing opportunities for guys who, you know, if Burrow is drafted as quarterback 6 and finishes quarterback 1, he still smashes ADP. It's just in a different frame. We're all looking for that quarterback 18 who can be quarterback 5, and those guys happen every year. But who's to say that you go from 6 to 1 that isn't just as much an impactful move?
True. No, I mean, I can't argue with that. I think we have a lot of time over the offseason to kind of parse out these quarterback rankings and the way the position looks right now. Before we toss to our first break and start talking about the candidates that could be this year's version of the Cincinnati Bengals, the Carnival offense, I do just want to ask you about Chase Brown because he has been, I don't want to say like a difficult player to rank because I think we're all kind of comfortable, even if it seems weird because he doesn't have the pedigree of some of these other guys. You know, he's a day 3 running back. There's always some risk with these guys that the team aren't super heavily invested into. I think we're all kind of comfortable with him industry wide. Like you look at any ranking, he's right there around running back 12, running back 13, early best ball ADP. He's running back 13. I'm going to reference, you know, early best ball ADP just because those are people that are actually, you know, drafting right now, things of that nature. But are you comfortable with him when you look at him versus some of the receiver names that he goes around? I'll just throw a few out there. You know, it's the Garrett Wilsons, it's Tyreek Hill, it's Terry McLaurin, you know, Jaden Daniels also in this mix as well. Marvin Harrison Jr., Devontae Adams. Would you rather, Mike Evans as well, would you rather draft into a guy like Chase Brown or one of those wide receivers in that range?
I'd prefer Brown to probably you know, 90% of the guys you just mentioned. Tyreek Hill, I could not be more out on, by the way. It's just, man, I think the Chiefs might have gone bad. He didn't have a long catch after week one. That's just crazy. I know it was a lot of things, as any football success or failure has a lot of parents, but Tyreek Hill really scares me. I think Chase Brown is mispriced right now in ADP, and I think he's going to be somebody who rises in the summer without a news item that's attached to it. Usually when players have movement in ADP, it's because we're all overreacting to some quote or something, or somebody sprained an ankle or something like that. But I think the market should just look up and say, like, why are we not treating Chase Brown more seriously? As you mentioned, they really haven't brought in any competition. I mean, P. Ryan is a good pass blocker that will get him on the field sometimes. He's not going to do much when he actually handles the ball. The back that they drafted was a third round guy. I mean, they basically said, Chase Brown, you're our guy. That's the way they've handle things. They brought in no major competition. Zach Moss last year, what, 3.3 yards a carry? I mean, give me a break. I mean, he's not easy a backup. He really should be like a running back three on a decent team, and he might ultimately be that on this team. So I think Brown, people who are getting Brown in the third round right now, which is gettable, enjoy it while it lasts. He'll be a locked in second round pick, I think, when the major part of draft season kicks in.
Yeah, as I've said on the show over the last few months, I can't quite get out of my head Zach Taylor saying at his combine media availability that, hey, we don't, you know, we're looking at running backs because we don't necessarily want some of those games where Chase Brown, I'm paraphrasing, but where Chase Brown was on the field for basically every single snap, at least over 90% in a bunch of games. That can be true, and he can also still be a good third round pick. Like, right, if Chase Brown was going to play 100% of the snaps, he'd be a first round pick, right? He'd be that type of guy. So I think he can dip down to like 75%, and you can still get more than enough juice from the squeeze of a, you know, running back 13, 33rd overall type of player. So I'm with you, Scott, that when I look at, and this is true of a lot of running backs, honestly, when I weigh him against some of the wide receivers, at least in these early drafts, I have been kind of gravitating towards wanting the running back as opposed to some of those wide receivers where, again, this is more of a conversation over the course of the summer that we'll have. I don't see a huge difference in like Marvin Harrison or Terry McLaurin's projection as a guy like, you know, Calvin Ridley or something way down the draft board. But we will get to those conversations throughout the course of the summer.
Let me just attach one more thing to this. Okay. A very popular build for fantasy managers is the hero RB, right? Where you get the one guy you can hang your hat on, and then you're fortifying the other positions. A lot of times when I go hero RB, I want that receiver room that's the envy of everybody, that's Matt Harmon approved in reception perception. So the question is, okay, is Chase Brown good enough for a hero RB build? And my answer is absolutely. If I left the draft where the only signature back I had was Brown, and I had that wide receiver, I was winning the flex, I was winning the wide receiver room. Yeah, that's a roster I'd go to war with.
All right, well, that is a definitive answer to is Scott Pienowski comfortable with Chase Brown's early ADP? On that note, we are going to take our first break. When we come back, we will look at our flip the script candidates for this year's Bengals, the Carnival offense of 2025, right after this. All right, we are back. So we dove into last year's Bengals. It is time to flip the script to 2025. All right, so reminder, this is how this is going to go. We're going to throw out candidates, and then we're going to analyze those candidates one by one. We're going to get to two to three, usually three, finalists to move on to where we're going to vote and pick the winner of this year's insert the title. This one is the Carnival offense, as we've been saying. Qualifications, I think, that we've settled on now to be the Carnival offense this year, Cincinnati Bengals. Got to have skill position players we want to draft, buy into in fantasy, of course. I think the quarterback, Scott, it's got to be, you know, it's got to be like a plus starter. I think functional is a little bit too low of a bar. I think they've got to be someone that is at least average to slightly above average, above board, right? Bonus if it's a concentrated offense, but I don't think that is a necessary component, as we talked about. And of course, we got to have a defense that could be bad enough to force the offense to try to keep up, keep the games interesting. So first candidate I want to discuss is the Atlanta Falcons. And Scott, I was actually saying this, I feel like in January or when the season was ending, that it was on my radar that the Falcons could be a good kind of candidate for this year's Bengals. So let's discuss them here. I think we know some of these skill position players, Scott, are very good. We love Drake London. I am very excited about Drake London's 2025 season. Darnell Mooney was a nice find for them. Bijan Robinson, one of the best running backs in the league. They got depth with Tyler Allgeier. You know, Kyle Pitts is there. He's Kyle Pitts. I think the key question is Michael Penix. Like, can Michael Penix be that above average quarterback? Not a lot to go off from his rookie season, but based on sort of the glimpses we saw of him towards the end of the year, what sort of quarterback are you expecting to see for the Falcons in 2025?
Yeah, that's the big question here, right? I mean, the transition season for them last year, Zach Robinson was the new offensive coordinator from the McVay tree. They've transitioned finally from Kirk Cousins, who gave us like 3.5 months of horrible football, to Penix at the end of the season. And it's hard to know what they're getting there. The Penix came into the NFL in an advanced stage. It kind of spiked late in his college career. But you have a team. We like this. You know, Bijan Robinson is, a lot of people think he's the running back one on their board. I have him ranked there ahead of Barkley. I know it's not necessarily everybody agrees with that, but I think that's a consensus view of the landscape at the moment. Drake London, look at what he did the last 8 games, a 1,400-yard pace. He targeted like crazy. We love that. I think you talked about how important you introduce this with, does the quarterback have to be plus? And ultimately, I think the Falcons' defense will be bad again. We know last year they didn't have a pass rush. They get a schedule that's going to be mostly indoors. Obviously, all their home games will be indoors. It's going to come down to how good Penix is. If Penix can be even slightly above average, I think the stuff around him is going to elevate him. And I think the defense, I know they tried to address that pass rush problem in the draft, but it's the type of thing that could take more than a year to fix. Last year, they did allow over 400. They didn't get to 400 points themselves, although they just missed despite everything going wrong. I mean, Cousins just looked so washed, and you couldn't run half the playbook, it felt like, because of the physical limitations of Cousins, of what makes him comfortable and what makes him uncomfortable. So once you answer the Penix question, you can answer the carnival question for the Falcons. But even if you don't put the Falcons in the carnival bucket, I'm going to draft Robinson. I'm going to have shares of Robinson. I'm going to force that issue. And Drake, it's going to be when the candidate picks for me to draft is like Drake London and two other guys. I feel like London's going to be the guy I press on a lot. He's already a very good player. I think this is the year he pushes into like the first round conversation for 2026.
I'm completely with you on Drake London. And I think the real key with him, and I've said this a lot, is that last year the coaching staff really got the role right for him, which is in Arthur Smith's offense, he was just a static X receiver. And like, Drake London can do that and he can be great there, but he's such a fluid athlete and such a high-end separator, so good against zone coverage. You want to move that guy around. In fact, Drake London was on the show last year talking about that in the middle of the season. And Kirk Cousins really like express that, oh man, like I'm going to pepper him when this guy is in the slot. But when Penix got into the mix, then we saw that too. Like, he was still in the slot in the final 3 games on 41% of his snaps, and he got some looks there, but he averaged 16 yards per reception because Michael Penix, it was, those passes were a journey, Scott, but like the downfield outbreaking routes that Kirk Cousins was certainly not going to hit, Desmond Ridder, Marcus Mariota, any of those guys, they weren't hitting Drake London on those routes. But Penix was willing and able to, for the most part, hit those throws. Now, I think he's always going to be kind of a accuracy comes and goes sort of player in Michael Penix. I think he will be a little bit volatile in year two. But personally, I do think he can be good enough where this offense can be at the level we need for them to be a carnival team, because I have no faith that the defense is going to be an above average unit in 2025 or really anytime soon. I just don't think they're there from a personnel standpoint. Even if those edge rushers are good that they took in the first round, those guys they're light, they're small. I think they're going to get run over. They play against three good run teams within their own division. So I think that, to me, I really want the Falcons to be one of our three finalists here, because I want to draft into a lot of these skill position players. I think Penix can be just good enough. Maybe there's more. Maybe the ceiling's higher than I'm sort of saying here, but I think he'd be just good enough to be the type of quarterback we need for this offense to work out.
Well said. And let's just give some props to Darnell Mooney, who set up where True. He can have a fair amount of regression from last year and still beat his ADP, because it's just wide receiver 48 at the moment. So there are certain, he fits. He's maybe more of a best ball play than he is a seasonal play, but And I know that feels like a cop-out at times to say things like that. But Darnell Mooney's a good football player, and he's overshadowed, of course, by London. He's overshadowed by Robinson. He's maybe even overshadowed by the quarterback situation. But I feel confident he's going to beat his ADP and be a useful player in seasonal, and I think a very useful player as we're doing those best ball drafts as we try to get ready for the season.
All right. So to me, I think the Falcons are going to be one of our three finalists, but we can discuss later if we want to boot them out here. The next team that we're going to talk about, actually, the more I think about it, the less I'm convinced that the Dallas Cowboys can be one of these teams, because I do think the offense can be really, really good, especially the passing game. The running game, I just don't really know from a fantasy angle, like, where are we going with the Javonte Williams, Jaden Blue, Miles Sanders backfield. But, you know, that's I don't know. It can be a good run game if this offensive line pops, but I certainly want to proactively draft into the pass game, Scott. But the more I look at the defense, like, there are some holes on that side. Certainly in the secondary, there are some issues at cornerback. But I just think if Micah Parsons is you know, healthy and he's playing football, I don't think this defense can be bad enough for them to be a true carnival team.
Yeah, that's going to be the issue there. Is the defense bad enough? And I couldn't help but laugh when you mentioned that running back room, because it just cracks me up. And actually, for carnival purposes, if you're going to have a problem on offense, it might as well be the running game. Let's throw the ball more. Let's let Dak Prescott maybe lead the league in pass attempts. And the way this offense is constructed, that sounds like a good idea to me. But it's going to come down to if the defense collapses or not. It did last year. There's a lot of injuries, of course. We know the coaching is always under scrutiny in Dallas. It's just, I mean, producer Colin wasn't going to let us have a podcast without talking about the Cowboys. And I ask you, Matt, has somebody told George Pickens that he's he get traded? That's great. He's not the best receiver on his own team now. Can George Pickens coexist with CeeDee Lamb, knowing that there's going to be games where Lamb gets 15 targets and Pickens gets 4?
It's a good question, man. I think Pickens is he's such an odd player, and I don't mean that, you know, like, poorly. I think Pickens is he's a good player. I think he's actually really suited to being more of a number two than a number one. I think as long as they're winning games and he's getting, like, high yield targets, I think that will be okay. But there are going to be some games where he gets, like, 3 balls thrown his way, and I think it's a volatile, like, experiment. I always come back to one of my buddies said, like, well, it's going to be explosive one way or another. And that is certainly true with the George Pickens experience. I'm comfortable where he's being drafted right now. Just to bring the point back to the defense, when Micah Parsons got back in week 10, they were 14th in EPA per play allowed. So, like, that is certainly above the bar of what we're looking for. And I actually think that Eberflus, you know, he's probably not a needle moving defensive coordinator necessarily, but he's not a bozo either as a defensive coordinator. So to me, I think that we're going to be fine. Like, it's a risk. Like I said, look at some of these cornerbacks that we're showing on the screen right now. Like, not necessarily, there's some injury issues with Trayvon Diggs. There's injury issues, obviously, with Overshown at linebacker. Like, is Deron Bland more of a nickelback, or is he a guy that can hang on the outside? I think those are outstanding questions. But I do think that this defense is good enough, simply if Micah Parsons is out there, to be, like, a team that I don't think could be a carnival offense.
Right. I mean, the three previous seasons, they were top 10 and actually usually in the top 5 in defensive points and yards allowed. This is a decent defense on paper. And I'm glad you mentioned Flus, because one of my favorite things that teams do, the Patriots did it with Josh McDaniels. We saw the Commanders have success last year with Cliff Kingsbury, is when you take a failed head coach, and it's a reverse Peter principle, right? The Peter principle is you promote somebody and then they find their level of incompetence and they fail for you. The reverse of that is you take somebody, well, why did we like Eberflus in the first place? Why did we like Josh McDaniels in the first place? Why did we like Cliff Kingsbury in the first place? Because they were really good designers of a defensive or offensive unit. So get these guys back. I absolutely love when you can, you know, North Turner was one of these guys. Wade Phillips was one of these guys. You didn't like them as head coaches. You love them as coordinators. Anytime we saw last year with Minnesota, right? Brian Flores was the architect of their defense. He obviously had a kind of a checkered history in Miami, and there's a lot to unpack there. I realize Flores, I still think he might be a good head coach. I'm not giving up on that. But anytime you can get a former head coach as a coordinator, I think it's a great win. And the Dallas had a good defense the three prior years. Last year is an injury absence and a lot of things going wrong. They're going to have their defense is going to, I think it's as simple as that. As much as they're going to be a fun team, they're the Cowboys. They get eyeballs, they get ratings, and Pickens is going to be explosive in good ways and bad ways. But their defense is going to keep them from being a true carnival team.
So I think we can safely move on from them, even if their offense is one that I'm excited about. I just don't think they quite fit this exercise. Next team we got to talk through here is the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think we're all universally excited about what Liam Cohen is going to bring to Jacksonville. The arrival of Travis Hunter, Brian Thomas Jr. in year two. There's plenty of sickos out there that are very excited about Brenton Strange as a potential breakout tight end. And, you know, I think that's certainly possible. Even some of the depth pieces are interesting. The remake on the offensive line, especially on the interior with Robert Hainsey and Patrick McCary coming over in free agency. That's interesting to me. You know, we're still sorting out the backfield, of course, but I think we're all good with the offense could potentially take a leap here. Again, this is another team, Scott, that I'm not quite sure what to expect over on the defensive side of the football. They were 31st last year in EPA per play allowed on the season. They were not a good defense. People were excited about the coordinator coming over from Atlanta. Did not work out. This year it's Anthony Campanaro, I believe. I might be screwing that last name up, but it's a first-time defensive coordinator. A lot of young pieces on that side, but there are some good players on that side of the ball as well. We also don't know how much Travis Hunter is going to be playing on defense as well. That's another kind of variable here. Where are you at with Jacksonville as a potential carnival team for 2025?
Yeah, amazingly, that's a really great setup, and amazingly, you went through it without, I think, saying Trevor Lawrence's name once, and he's like every team,
point.
You know, the quarterback is the front man, and we got to find out, right? Trevor Lawrence was drafted to be an MVP candidate and as a franchise savior. He has not been that guy. It has largely been a failure around him. Doug Peterson, which is one of those coaches like Frank Reich, who was a right answer at one point, who became a wrong answer and kind of dated himself out of the league. And man, it's so funny. It seems like 10 minutes ago, I was worried what would happen to Tampa Bay when they lost Dave Canales. And then maybe Liam Cohen is even an upgrade on Canales. I mean, you know, the offense that Tampa Bay had last year, very exciting to see him land in Jacksonville. They get Hunter. Thomas is always open despite all the poor play around him last year. He had a breakout season and just smashes ADP, was one of the league right answers. Ultimately, it comes down to two things. Is the defense going to be bad enough? I think it will be. Is Trevor Lawrence going to be good enough? That's where I'm not sure. I think this might be a thing where 4 or 5 weeks in, people are like, yeah, you know, I was expecting more from Trevor Lawrence, setup, Cohen, Hunter, all that stuff. And then maybe it clicks around Halloween, or maybe it clicks in November. And then we're saying in the middle of November, like, oh yeah, you know, the Jaguars, I want to have Jaguars on my playoff rosters, or I'm excited about what Lawrence is starting. Maybe he's starting to pick up. Because remember, it took a while, you know, for Canales last year to get things going in Carolina. And you know, there's a team I'm interested in this year. I think we're going to talk about them. But Jacksonville is a buzzy team, a destination offense, but it ultimately comes down to what is your opinion of Lawrence?
Anthony Campanelli is the current Jaguars defensive coordinator. He's coming over from Green Bay, taking over for Ryan Nielsen, who flopped in the job last year, despite a lot of people being excited about that hire. Weirdly, Scott, I'm actually I'm pretty optimistic that Lawrence can be, you know, is he going to put up Joe Burrow stats from last year? Maybe not, but I think he can be at the level of quarterback that we are looking for this exercise, where he is good enough to put up a lot of production, and he's got two receivers who are just they're just going to be open. And even in plays where Liam Cohen is designing these guys open, I mean, the amount of plays last year that Jalen McMillan got wide open down the field last year because of the structure of the offense was, I mean, it was notable going back and charting McMillan for reception perception. So now he's got Brian Thomas Jr., Travis Hunter, and some like useful ancillary players too. I think Deami Brown, Parker Washington, like these guys can play in the receiver room. And I do think this offense can actually be pretty concentrated around the top two guys in BTJ and Travis Hunter. So that's another sort of feather in the cap of this team being a carnival offense. But I actually do have some optimism that the defense, if healthy, can be not like a bottom of the league unit. Maybe they're not going to be one of the better defenses in the NFL. Again, coaching is a question here, but Trayvon Walker stabilized into being a pretty solid player. Josh Hines Allen is one of the better edge rushers in the league. Tyson Campbell, pretty underrated corner. Devin Lloyd had some moments last year. I think this defense could be not like bottom five caliber. So that's why I'm not sure if they could be like a carnival team necessarily.
Yeah. You know, I do look at Lawrence. I look at his stats. His career touchdown rate is 3.4%, which is very low. Yeah, I just can't see it being that low this year with Cohen, with Thomas, with what Hunter. I do think Hunter's being overdrafted in the early part of the draft season, only because he's going to play some defense, and he went to an offense where, as great as Hunter can be, Thomas has already proven he could be great at the NFL level. I have to view this as Thomas's offense before it's Hunter's offense, but I can't wait to see this team play, man. I know teams don't take the exhibition seasons, you know, seriously, and there's good reason. They mostly want to stay healthy. They don't want to reveal anything, but and we haven't talked about their backfield, right? I mean, it sounds like they've soured on ETN. Tootin is a very popular sleeper. Bigsby hasn't really learned how to catch the ball at the NFL level, or maybe they haven't allowed him to do that, but he has moments. Is there somebody in this backfield you think you're going to draft a lot of?
I will say my one early take on the backfield is that I've seen an alarming amount of people like victory lapping anything that comes out of this backfield. Like, see, I told you guys we're overdrafting Basil Tootin because he, which by the way, I mean, people are drafting in May. They know what they're getting themselves into. All right, relax. You told you're overdrafting Basil Tootin when he fumbles in OTAs. A coach speak kind of quote about Travis Etienne comes out. He's like, I don't know. Liam Cohen's, I don't understand why people think we're going to trade Travis Etienne. We're really happy with him. All this stuff. Don't be victory lapping things that are happening in May. Give me a break. But I do think there's going to be a right answer here. And I actually think Tank Bigsby could be a right answer too. We didn't even mention him yet, but he was probably the best runner on the team last year. And I've actually taken a decent bit of him in like early drafts just because he goes so late. So I think it's a backfield worth taking your shots on, but we might not know who the right answer is, Scott, until like week six, week seven.
It's so funny that Tank Bigsby is Tank Bigsby. I keep waiting to see like a 245-pound fullback, and he's this 215-pound guy. But yeah,
he does run pretty hard.
The best ball, the victory lap bros in the spring are adorable, right? Yeah, Tootin fumbles on his first day of practice, and people like want to get him out of the league, have him be cut. You know, it's like give me a break, let the thing breathe a little bit.
So Jaguars finalist team, like top three in our exercise for you, or no?
They're on the seam. They're borderline. They could go either way. How do you view them?
I think same. I don't feel enough conviction to say they're a finalist, but I think they're certainly a team that could, like, we could look back and be like, yeah, that was actually the correct answer here. But I just have a little bit
they're
more faith
second. They're,
in some of these
they're on the bus, but they're in the back of the bus.
Good way of saying it. A team that I think could be closer towards the front of the bus is actually the Las Vegas Raiders. Geno Smith certainly is a quarterback who I feel like you've nominated actually the Seahawks or you've called the Seahawks a carnival team in previous years, Scott. So Geno Smith, I think, is good enough to be the quarterback of a carnival offense. Really interesting skill position players there, highlighted, of course, by Ashton Jeanty and Brock Bowers. We've got Jack Besh and Jacoby Myers in the receiver room. Those are guys that are interesting kind of after wide receiver 40 ADPs, if this offense is going to hit. Chip Kelly is the offensive coordinator here. And I look at that defense, Scott, and despite the presence of, Max Crosby, who's one of the best edge players in the NFL, I look at that secondary and I think, yeah, this is a team that could be giving up a lot of production to opposing offenses. So this was one of the teams I thought like certainly makes sense defensively to be this team. The question is just like, how high can this offense fly?
Right. And, Chip Kelly is another guy who fits that, reverse Peter Principle concept, right? Maybe he was miscast as a head coach, but I think we all have respect of his ability to design offense. Again, it probably comes down to what you think of Geno Smith. Now, I mean, Bowers was terrific last year and he had a quarterback room that just, made no sense. It was just basically a clown car. So if Geno Smith doesn't need to do much to outpace those guys, obviously everybody likes Jeanty. I mean, he did have a huge workload in college and you have to be a little bit concerned about that, but the concentration could be really tight here. I'm a Jacoby Myers guy. It could be those three, basically the triplets for Smith. It comes down to, what do you think Chip Kelly, how relevant is he? How modern is he? Is he ready for another splash? And remember, he was all the rage, 15 years ago, whenever it was when he popped and then, everything fell apart. Thought Sam Bradford was the answer and he wasn't, but I'm still a Chip Kelly guy. Just like, again, it's easy to take shots at him, but again I point to somebody like Kingsbury, who everybody was making fun of last year, and like, oh my god, he's gonna ruin Jaden Daniels, and actually he put out a really good set of plays for Daniels, and Daniels was the right answer. All the people drafting Anthony Richardson should have drafted Jaden Daniels like three rounds later, which is I think one thing we did get right last summer. But it comes down to how you feel about Kelly for me and how you feel about Geno Smith. I was not in on Bowers last year because I didn't think he could beat a horrible quarterback room. And then he said, oh, yeah, you don't think I can do that? Well, everything Sam Laporta did, I'm just going to rip it to shreds and have the best rookie tight end season of all time. So Vegas, man, they're still going to win 6 or 7 games at best because I just don't like the depth of the defense. But I think it's going to be a fun offense. They're not going to make the finals for me, but they're going to be a very interesting second-tier carnival team.
Yeah, second-tier carnival team that, again, similar to Jacksonville, if the offense is what we think it is, I think they could end up being the right answer. The problem is just some of the questions that you mentioned there. I think the depth on offense is questionable here as well, because I like Jack Besh, but he's a rookie wide receiver. He's somebody I definitely am very excited about, and I think that him and Jacoby Myers can actually complement each other much more than maybe people think, because there's some slotness to both of their games here. The offensive line's a pretty solid unit, but not a perfect unit. And Geno Smith, like, at this point of his career, I still think could be the type of quarterback that executes this offense. But yeah, I'm with you, Scott, that they're sort of a second tier team. But because I have so little faith in the defense, that's why I want to just highlight them as a potential right answer here. Final team to talk about on this side of the break, Arizona Cardinals. I don't know, Scott. This team trips me up at this point, honestly. I'm not quite sure how I feel about them. Offensively, we know that they're running the same thing back from last year, same coordinator, literally no changes personnel-wise. They made a lot of additions on defense, so I guess the question here is the defense going to be improved enough that they can no longer qualify as a carnival team?
Yeah, it's certainly part of this. To me, this is going to be really simplistic, I just can't get there with Kyler Murray, right? I mean, he's not getting any taller. And I'm just nervous that some of the staples of Harrison's game, some of the staples of McBride's game are throws that Murray can't see. That he, yeah. They were so frustrating to watch. And Kyler is a great athlete. You see games where he just doesn't want to run. And there are other games he does run proactively. But I think he'd like to do a little bit of less of that every year, and so take that athleticism, and he can't get the full benefit of that. This offense frustrates me. I mean, last year, right, McBride was the Deontay Johnson guy. He didn't have a touchdown to the very end of the season, and it was almost like a youth league game where they were trying so hard to get him a touchdown, and it was just a big mess. I mean, Harrison, I don't want to be too hard on Harrison because the expectations were so sky high that almost anything was going to feel like a letdown, but man, totally. If they redrafted, he would never go ahead of Brian Thomas, I don't think, on anybody's sheet. But yep. I can't get there with Kyler Murray. And that's why they're an easy disqualification for me. I don't trust the quarterback enough.
I'm with you on a lot of what you said there. And just the fact that they made additions on the defensive side of the football, Josh Sweat, Walter Nolan in the first round, Will Johnson was, if he's healthy, a nice value on the second day of the draft. That, and like, I think it was finally time for Jonathan Gannon to get some toys on that side of the ball. He did it. And I think that's a big part. That's a variable. And then the fact that I'm with you that, like, yeah, the idea that, oh, they're going to move Marvin Harrison around more in a second season, I buy it. I think that's going to happen. But okay, then who are we getting on the field more? Like Zay Jones as the X receiver? Like Michael Wilson's kind of our downfield, like that. There's diminishing returns there. So I'm with you that, and you were right on this, Scott, like 100% correct. Scott Pienowski called that, from the first moment, like that Marvin Harrison Jr. was slotted as a early second, late first round pick, top 12 wide receiver. I remember the email chain with you being like, are we sure? Like we're just going to do this with like a rookie receiver. We're going to do this. So you were right to raise the alarm bells there. And I just don't think there has been enough change in the offseason to push forward a unit that looks very similar to last year. I'm still overall optimistic about this Cardinals team, but I just can't get there as them being like a top 5 offense. And I think the defense can be improved enough that they're not really a carnival level team. So with that, we are not going to move them to the finalist bracket. We are going to take our second break here. When we come back, we'll talk through some more candidates and some very interesting potential carnival finalist teams right after this. All right, we are back. Let's talk Carolina Panthers here, Scott Pienowski. Literally the worst defense maybe in NFL history, but certainly the worst defense last year, 32nd in EPA per play. They've made some nice, smart additions on that side, so I don't want to discount that. But they could go from hideous to bad, and that would be an improvement. So they could still be a defense that qualifies here. How much faith do you have in the offense after adding Tedrick McMillan in the first round and continuing to sort of invest and hopefully develop some of the younger players on that side of the ball?
Right. It comes down to in my mind, do you buy the improvement we saw from Bryce Young at the end of the season? And it's just so crazy that a year ago it was like, oh my God, the Panthers, they screwed up. How could they have not taken CJ Stroud? And then in year two, Young, you know, horrible start, but he really finished the season well. And as he got more comfortable in the Canales offense, and everything went wrong around CJ Stroud, offensive line was hurt, all the receivers were hurt, the offensive coordinator was maybe overmatched, and now maybe the Panthers took the right guy after all. I mean, it's certainly a long way to play with that, but I'm a Canales guy. I was encouraged by what I saw from Young. He also has a sneaky running component to his game, which will maybe make – I think he's a perfect – you play in the league, you start two quarterbacks. Bryce Young is a great guy to target as a value. You might draft him as your third guy, and he might be your second guy through the season. For them to be Carnival, though, McMillan has to be very good right away. And I just – that's a big ask of any rookie receiver. Obviously, this room is so barren of talent. I mean, Adam Thielen is still a useful player, but I think he's like 57 years old. I mean, it feels like he's been in the NFL – since, you know, I think he predates the Panthers. That's how old Adam Thielen feels. I know that's all, though that isn't true. Why do they keep adding
Adam Thielen? Adam Thielen's like my age, by the way. So I don't know. I don't know about how I feel about you saying all this, but that's fine.
You know, they signed Hubbard to the extension, and then they just keep, every time I look, they've added another good running back. I don't really understand their plan with that, but at the end of the day, I don't think this is enough for downfield talent yet, even if McMillan is good. I don't know that Young has developed enough as a passer, even though I think he's an interesting fantasy guy. Part of that is because of the running component. I like Canales. At the end of the year, we're going to be like, oh, yeah, give Carolina. They were fun. They were frisky. To be Carnival, though, you really need the quarterback to have the potential to be great. And I just don't think Young's anywhere close to that. But at least I'm open-minded to Bryce Young being a bona fide NFL football player. I don't think a year ago anybody thought that was reasonable.
I'm a little bit more optimistic on the offense and the receiver room maybe than you are, because I think McMillan's going to be like a day one good starter at X receiver. And I think the downstream effect there is pretty significant. Like the fact that Xavier Leggett's not going to have to play X receiver anymore is pretty significant. Some of his best stuff comes when he's working off the line of scrimmage and he's running in breakers. Some more of that like flanker sort of work for him. And I just wrote an article for the website looking at the top 10 receivers in yards per route run against man coverage last year among players that ran 275 plus routes. The Panthers have two receivers on the list. It's Adam Thielen at number 5 and Jalen Coker, I believe, at number 8 or 9, and which, you know, by the way, shout out to the Cokeheads there. And a lot of that was because Bryce Young was so good at throwing against man coverage in the slot. Both of these guys they're not slot only players, but they are probably slot mostly players in Adam Thielen, who again is like my age. So very disrespectful of Scott to call him the oldest player in the NFL. Or maybe that's just the reality of where I'm at in my life right now. But Coker, also another guy that was really good working against man coverage from the slot. So I think there's depth in this receiver room. Maybe they don't have, they certainly don't have a Jamar Chase. Maybe McMillan in times can be a time, a certain point could be T. Higgins. Probably not as a rookie. So, yeah, I don't know that they're a finalist for me either, but I think they're in that same group of guys like Jacksonville and Las Vegas as sort of those borderline Carnival-level teams.
Let me give you the last 7 games for Bryce Young. I think a lot of people, even knowing that he was playing better, are going to be surprised by how good these numbers were. 11 touchdowns, 3 picks, 6.9 YPA, which, again, you know, with what's around him, that's pretty good. And he ran for 5 touchdowns. So he was a good football player. This goes back to the end of November. So the idea that it takes a while to gel with a new offense, with a new scheme. And also just giving him, you always talk about layup targets. This offense had no easy buttons to push in 2023. True. And one thing Dallas was able to do last year is to get Young those rhythm throws, get him the, okay, this is an easy 5-yard completion on 1st and 10. Let's take it. Stuff like that. They had that offense had no component of that the previous season. And then, of course, you know, everybody got fired in the middle of the year. So then you have all different voices come in. I mean, just totally set up to fail. I don't want to act like, I think you're more bullish on this team than I am because you expect McMillan maybe to be an eyelash better than I do right away. Although, who doesn't like McMillan? I mean, he was drafted as early as he was for a reason. But I am, the arrow's pointing up on this offense, and I'm going to have Bryce Young shares. I was a big Hubbard guy last year, and now the offense is better. This is going to be a fun team. I think this is how fun they're going to be. They're going to like get flexed into a game in the second half of the year. There'll be some horrible game on Sunday night. Like, oh, you know what? The Panthers are actually kind of fun. Let's get them on Sunday night.
frankly, this is the second NFC South team we've talked about. It won't be the last, because I think this division is just going to be a little bit carnival-esque this year in and of its own. So
there you go.
Probably not a finalist, I agree, but they're up there. Washington Commanders, next team that I wanted to throw on the list here. This was my suggestion because I think this offense is going to be good again. Even if I wish they had added like one more pass catching piece, like somebody to really take some real deal outside receiver reps alongside Terry McLaurin, because Deebo Samuel's just, he's just not that guy. He's never really been that guy, but he's certainly not going to be that guy at this point in his career. Maybe wish they had added one more explosive running back, but I think Jaden Daniels, to use a Scott Pianowski term, is too big to fail. I think the offense is just too big to fail. I think this is going to be maybe it's not going to be quite historically efficient, especially on late downs as it was last year, but it's going to be a top 6-5 unit league wide. And I look at that defense, Scott, and despite some of what they did last year, I just don't think this looks like a good defense on paper. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Of course, maybe Trey Amos hits the ground running as a rookie corner. You know, maybe Marshawn Lattimore bounces back. Mikey Sanders still slots into more of a comfortable inside slot corner role, though he played well on the outside. I just don't think they have nearly enough juice up front from a pass rushing standpoint. And I think the secondary is questionable enough that this you could paint me many scenarios where this defense, which last year absolutely outkicked its coverage on the whole, being ranked 22nd in EPA per play, I could see scenarios where they're a bottom five defense this year, and that pushes them into a lot of carnival-like settings from an offensive standpoint.
Yeah, they almost got to the 400 points allowed that I like to see, the 391 last year. I just wish they had a little more, I don't know, just some pep in their wide receiver room. We're obviously long-running Terry McLaurin fans here. And Deebo Samuel is a very interesting player, but I mean, what, age 30 season for Terry? It's an age 29 season for Deebo, and he's been hurt so much. Zach Ertz is still somebody they like a lot. He's in his mid-30s. You know, you got to figure the cliff. I know Kingsbury loves Ertz, but you got to figure the, no pun intended, the cliff could come at any point for Ertz. Still, man, Jane Daniels, such a fun player. I wish they had that backfield piece too. I wish they had somebody who, when a play breaks down, Daniels could flip the ball to somebody. He could make somebody miss and, you know, gain 17 yards. I'd love to see them have a guy like that. Even like a Chase Brown player would look like Marshall Faulk on this team, I think. But the defense is going to be, last year they probably, it was almost like, you know, didn't take a shower, I'll just slather on the deodorant and the cologne, hope nobody notices. That felt like that was their defense last year, as I, you know, reminisce about my college days, I guess, but, you know, wearing sweatpants a little bit too often. But they're not going to make the finals for me, but they have the potential to be the right answer. And Washington, because of Daniels, because of how fun this offense was last year, and because what's the upside for their defense? Maybe it's league average. There's no chance it's going to be a good defense this year. It's they're going to try to outscore everybody. So they're going to try to – the team has to be – and it's good. Offense is more continuity in the NFL, right? I mean, Aaron Schatz taught us that a million years ago. So if you're going to be good on one side of the ball, let it be offense. But there's going to be a lot of 30 to 27 games. Well, are they going to be 40 to 37? I don't know. But there's going to be a lot of fun in D.C.
And it's a huge feather in the cap of Dan Quinn if they get to be that league average defense. But Dan Quinn's the type of coach that could pull that off. I mean, shoot, again, like I said, they outkicked their coverage last year when they at times were kind of a league average defense. 22nd in EPA per play, 18th in success rate. Let's get to the last two teams here that are Scott Pianowski additions, starting with the Detroit Lions, Scott. I love that you threw this one in here because, you know, I think there's a chance that the Lions overall could maybe take a step back. I'm still optimistic about Dan Campbell's one of the best coaches in the NFL. But Frank Ragnow just retired this week. That's a huge loss. They continue to chip away at that interior offensive line. I don't think that the Lions are going to be a bad team, but what is the scenario that you're painting here where they end up being a carnival team this season, Scott?
Horrendously hard schedule. They do play the AFC North, so they have Ravens, they have Bengals. They're going to be in some shootouts there. And we know last year the defense was actually really good, and basically the team photo got hurt. You know, Hutchinson was maybe the front runner for defensive player of the year. He goes down, but then by the end of the year, they were playing guys off the street. I mean, you can't withstand that many injuries, and still, that's why when people get all in a in a huff about, oh, how could they lose to Washington? I think the Lions would have lost to Philadelphia anyway, even if they had somehow found a way to win that game. The Eagles were a horrible matchup for them, and they just lost too much personnel. So what happens when you're good? The price of being good is everybody raids your roster. They raid your coaching staff. You know, Ben Johnson is in Chicago. Aaron Glenn is in New York. And even though we focus more on Johnson because he's, you know, offense is more the story in fantasy, I think they might miss Glenn more, because Glenn was, the fact that Glenn was able to keep this team competitive with all the guys they had hurt last year was a miracle. And now, granted, these guys are coming back. You hope they have healthy seasons, but
right.
I see a schedule. Obviously, all their home games are indoors. They're not quite as indoor friendly on the road, but it's going to be mostly an indoor schedule for Detroit. I don't know where the defense will be at with the new coordinator. And also with losing Ragnar, you hate to lose a dominant center. And look, good for him retiring on his terms. He obviously was in his 20s. He's not the first Detroit Lion to retire in the middle of his career. I mean, Sanders did that. Megatron did that. But, you know, if he wants to do something else with his life, he can still get out with his health. You know, good for you. But when you lose a center, that's one of the most important positions on offense. It's usually one of your smartest players. It's the center of your offensive line. I wonder if they may struggle to have a consistent running game. Obviously, Gibbs is capable of making any play successful. Montgomery's coming off a major injury. You would think he would be useful. But I wonder if maybe they have to uptick more passing. When an offense has holes, and look, this was the best offensive line in football the last couple of years, but they just lost a major piece. God forbid some other guys get hurt. What ultimately happens, you have to shield that by calling more pass plays and doing things more creatively in the passing game, because maybe you don't get the push in the running game. I think their run-pass ratio is going to go up this year. Goff will throw more passes. The schedule has me a little bit concerned. They're not going to be a final answer, but I put them in here because I think Detroit may be more pinball friendly this year than maybe people initially think.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned them, because I agree. I don't think they could be a finalist. Like, the defense is just too good. Like, Aiden Hutchinson coming back, you know, DJ Reed stepping in for Carlton Davis. I think that, you know, Kirby Joseph coming off a great year. Aline McNeil and DJ Reed are being healthy. Like, this is just, the defense is just, even if Aaron Glenn is a needle mover, and I think he is, I think defense is going to be too good for them to kind of be a carnival team. But I'm glad that you brought them up simply to have the discussion of, yeah, I think this team overall could take a step back and still be a very, very good team and like get to the NFC playoffs and, you know, maybe even get to the NFC championship game this year. That's totally possible. But I think in the regular season, they could be a team that are in more of these game scripts where they have to push the ball because they're not just, you know, putting the foot on the throat of an opposing team and playing with a lead all the time. And that makes me actually really interested in a guy like Jameis Williams at wide receiver 24. I think, you know, he's somebody that took a step. It's so weird, Scott. Like, The Lions are talking about, and maybe that he's just a guy that you have to talk about this way because you got to kind of constantly like be feeding into him and keeping him engaged and all that. But they're talking about him again this year like they were last year. And it's like, and people are being like, oh yeah, they're hyping up Jameis Williams for a breakout year. He had a breakout year last year. What are we talking about? Like, the guy, he's already established himself as a really good player. Why are we talking about Williams as if like, oh yeah, we expect a big year from him? No shit. He had a big year last year. He should have another big year this year. So I'm actually really interested in Williams at wide receiver 24 for all of the reasons that you just sort of outlined there, and the fact that he did have that breakthrough season last season.
I'm so glad you said that, because there's going to be somebody who comes up with an article of the breakout players of 2025, and they're going to try to shoehorn Jameson Williams on it. And the story already
I've
happened,
seen it. Yeah, right? I've already seen it. It's out there. Yeah. I've already seen it.
Drives me crazy. He's a maddening player because he takes the top off the defense, and he could also catch any pass behind the line of scrimmage or any short little dig and take it to the house too. And just to have a guy like that, it changes how teams have to defend you because they're just petrified of him all the time. It's so important to have that factor. Most teams don't have a guy like that, and they're always searching. That's why anybody who can run in the NFL, even if they're not technically a great receiver, is always going to have a job, because, you know, that's just a thing that every offense needs. But you also have to keep him engaged, as you said, because, you know, he makes a lot of mental mistakes, and he's the lion on the offense who's most likely to get a personal foul or to get a taunting penalty, or you know, throw the ball at the official, throw the ball at the defender,
get suspended. You know,
yeah, he's had suspension issues. I mean, you know, Jameson Williams needs to be carefully handled. Part of that is, I remember like back when the Celtics, Larry Bird used to say that Dennis Johnson was the best teammate he ever played with. And I always felt like part of that was, Johnson was a great player, was part of it was a con job that DJ was sensitive and needed to feel included, needed to feel important. And Bird was just kind of feeding to that, you know, for the seven people listening who can remember Larry Bird as an NBA player. But, let me tell you this, feet to fire, Matt. I don't think the Lions win the division this year. I don't know if it's the Packers who win it. I don't know if it's the Vikings who win it. I think the Bears will be improved. I think it's a year too early to put them in this mix. But if I had asked you to pick an NFC North winner right now, who would you go with?
I'm still probably going to go with the Lions just because I think they're they have the best head coach. And I think their offensive identity is centered more around Dan Campbell than people give it credit for. Like, I really
are you sure they have the best head coach? I would follow Kevin O'Connell.
Sure.
I love Campbell, but I would also follow Kevin O'Connell into a burning building. And Matt LaFleur, all he does is put out, you know, plus offenses year over year. I think three of these teams have we'd like this guy to coach our team the next 12 years.
Oh, I mean, spoiler alert, we're doing some pre-taped shows on Football 301 because Nate's going to be on paternity leave. And we just did top 10 coaches yesterday. It's not going to come out anytime in the next few weeks, but we just did top 10 coaches. All three of those guys were in my top 10. So it's not like, oh, yeah, they have the runaway best coach. But to me right now, if I was ranking one of those guys, I do think it's Dan Campbell. Now, he's had his staff rated. There's no question about that. But I do think that the offensive identity and what this team is, it more comes from Dan Campbell than I think people have given it credit for. So I think he's good enough to keep this thing on the track here. And they just, to me, I think they also have still the best roster, but like, we'll see what JJ McCarthy is, man. Like, we haven't seen him play football. You know, obviously the Packers are some outstanding questions there. So no, I think it is convincingly the Lions? No, but still, if again, feet to the fire, your question here, I think I would still take the Detroit Lions to win this division. But I think that's the question we have to ask about this exercise is like, can you be a good team and be a carnival, like a playoff team and be a carnival team? I think that's an important question for us to answer for our final team here, which is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And you wanted to add them to the list here, Scott. And I can't believe that I overlooked them. The producer Colin overlooked them, because it seems like, shoot, they were a team last year that could have been the carnival team in the NFL because the offense was awesome. They didn't quite have like the overall fantasy finishes among their wide receivers because of the injuries. But per game, Chris Godwin was one of the best in the NFL when he was playing. Mike Evans was still very good last year. And Bucky Irving is the obsession of the fantasy community right now because he was a revelation at running back. And I look at that defense and I don't really think they're going to be that much better this year defensively. So Scott, like, are they just an obvious finalist here because they were kind of this team last year? And really their only big addition veteran wise was Hassan Reddick as an edge rusher.
Yeah. I don't trust the defense. I mean, I know they were better defensively after the break last year, but it was just so schedule based and they're playing so many bad teams, and I trust Baker. I wasn't sure what to make of Baker Mayfield after they lost Canales. And then, you know, he was great with Cohen. Obviously, like most teams, they promoted from within after they lost Cohen. At this point, Mayfield is tenured enough that he's part of the offensive infrastructure. He's partly the offensive coordinator. They keep Evans, Godwin coming back. They draft Egbuka, who looks like somebody who could be a factor right away. They had a rookie receiver last year, McMillan, who was useful. They have backs who can catch the ball. I'm surprised you didn't have him here because I just don't – the defense is going to be mediocre at best, and I think it has a chance to be a lookout below bad defense. And if that's the case, man, they're a finalist. I think they're going to have 33-30 written all over them almost every week.
Yeah, I think they should be a finalist. There's some interesting young players here. Yaya Diaby, Kalijah Kancey, they've been solid. You know, can Logan Hall take a step in year two? But Antoine Winfield, maybe he's healthy over the whole season. That could help, but big questions over the course of the entire unit. So to me, I think they are definitely a carnival team. Maybe the only reason I didn't have them was, one, I just overlooked them because they were kind of this team last year. And also because I do think the offense is not going to be concentrated like a Bengals team. Like, they're not, I think because the receiver room goes four deep, if Chris Godwin's healthy and he's on the field the whole time, like when all these guys are on the field, it's like McMillan's, to me, is a wide receiver three who's going to be their wide receiver four. Like, he's still going to demand some opportunity and some playing time. And also, we have questions about the overall ecosystem, because they're not going to do what they did last year, which is they're going to say goodbye to a good offensive coordinator and actually end up on an upgrade. Josh Grizzard, I'm interested in him as a coordinator. He was the passing game coordinator last year, apparently in charge of a lot of like the late down stuff that they did. from a pass game standpoint. So pretty excited about that, him as the coordinator here. But I just don't think he's going to be an upgrade on what Cohen was last year, who might have been the best play caller in the NFL last year. So I'm with you. I think right now our two finalists are Atlanta and Tampa Bay. I'm going to give you the floor here if you want to go ahead and move one of, like, you've got the full jurisdiction. You want to move one of Jacksonville, Las Vegas, Carolina. Any of those three teams do you want to put in the finalist bracket as well?
Well, the three teams I was focusing on were the Bengals, the Falcons, and the Buccaneers. Those are my three finalists.
I guess, yeah, if you just want to say the Bengals could be this year's Bengals again, that's fine. All right, then that's fine. So those are our three finalists.
Are we allowed to say that?
Dude, this is our podcast. We can make the rules. There are no rules here. We're allowed to do whatever we want. So yeah, okay, those are our three finalists for this year's Cincinnati Bengals, the carnival offense of the 2025 season. Atlanta Falcons, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Cincinnati Bengals. Give me the three. Give me them in order of the teams that are most likely to be this year's Bengals between those three. Rank them 1 to 3.
Number three, Falcons. Number two, Bucks. I'm probably going to get booed down for this. Number one, Bengals.
You are going to get booed down for this. I will go number one, Falcons, because I've been saying this since January. I'm going to believe it. I think the Penix can be Falcons fans hated Nate Tice's Jay Cutler comparison for Michael Penix, but I actually think that's pretty perfect. I think he can, like, look, that's like,
I mean, Cutler could run a carnival offense, right? I mean, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. He's the perfect. He's honestly like the perfect carnival quarterback. So I think Penix can be just good enough to be.
Also, some of those teams he played on, some of those Bears teams he played on, that's where the whole narrow usage tree came from. It's like they were only throwing the ball to three or four guys. That was really fantasy. Jay Cutler was a really good fantasy player because he kept everybody in the game.
That's what I really love about it, too, is that this can be very concentrated like this year's Bengals. So, look, I will go number one, Falcons. I will go number two, Bucks. And then I will go number three, Bengals, just because, like, you know, they could do it, but it's boring. So
let's do this. Let's take the Bengals out of the equation as far as they can't be the right answer here. And let's let producer Colin break the tie. He can pick the Buccaneers. He can pick the Falcons.
So producer Colin is voting for the Falcons as his pick here. So the Falcons are this year's Bengals. Says it's simply
the division is right. The division is right. Yeah. The indoor schedule, right? And I think a huge part of it, I mentioned, I think in passing, it took Zach Robinson, I think, some time to get comfortable with the play sheet. He looked comfortable with the play sheet at the end of the season. So there's a guy, you all talk about, what is Penix in year two? What is Zach Robinson in year two? Maybe he's a right answer, right? Maybe he's somebody we're not talking about who by the end of the year, it's like, oh, wow, you know, look at all the refreshing things that Robinson was doing. Or look at Robinson, you know, putting out a game plan that makes Penix comfortable, you know, Penix comfortable, stuff like that. I think he's a huge part of this. I could definitely see it. I'm here for the Falcons. They're a team I can't wait to watch play. And it's really – I guess the bottom line is, because we did talk about the Panthers, we didn't talk about the Saints, and I'm fine with that. But if you want carnival football, the NFC South is your Huckleberry.
Yeah, I think that's right. Like, the carnival is the NFC South. It's somewhere in the South. Okay, like that's where the carnival is being held.
Is your answer?
That's where you're gonna want to take
runs football, right? I mean, the SEC. You know, I know I live in Big Ten country, but come on, the SEC is the best conference in college football, and you know the NFC South is the carnival conference. You know, we talked about the Jaguars, the AFC South. So we'll see if something can get going there. But yeah, I'm here for it, man. This got me excited about football. I'm ready to, you know, maybe write another article about the schedule.
No. Yeah, you go for that. I'm ready for a 35-30 NFC South game. Don't care who's participating.
I am so here for that.
I'm ready for that. Yeah, I'm ready for
that.
This has got me very excited. Our official first Flip the Script episode this year. Scott, I appreciate you joining me for this one. I will release you to go back to that schedule article that I know you're very excited to write. We are going to be back for the next edition of Flip the Script. It's going to come out next Wednesday. We're going to pre-tape that one because I am actually going to be on vacation for the next 2 weeks. So I will be on the show next week. And then the week after that, Andy and Dalton are going to handle the podcast. But next episode, very excited about this one. Going to come out on Wednesday. It is going to be who's this year's Jackson Smith and Jigba, the breakout wide receiver of 2025. Ray Garvin of Destination Devi is going to join me for that. Very excited about it. Until then, we are out.